This episode of Film Sack is brought to you in part by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack.
The future. The polar ice caps have melted, covering the earth with water. Those who survived have adapted to a new world.
I've seen your boat before. Haven't seen you. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Additional support for this episode comes to us from Stephen Casey, Daniel Malau, Zach Gowan, and Kamikaze Kim would like to wish I'm a Handful a happy anniversary. This episode is for you. Hey everybody, welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the depths of film entertainment for all mankind. My name is Scott Johnson. Welcome to another show. And with us today, we have Brian Lime Stealer Dunaway.
Hey, that's Exxon Valdez. Am I watching some kind of political commentary?
Yes.
Stupid Kevin Costner.
All right. Brian's traditional three-parter is done. Now moving on to Randy Smoker Jordan.
Sweet. Aloha, Scott. Brian. I'm just so glad that it has never occurred to you guys to tie a bucket to a string and just drop it to the bottom of the ocean to obtain all the dirt you could ever need. That little oversight is going to make my new Scamway business very profitable indeed.
It's funny. I had not thought of that one. I thought of a lot of breaks on this thing.
We should have like a whole show of plot holes.
Yeah, there's some serious plot holes. Speaking of plot holes, finally, rounding us out today, Brian, you ever seen Paper Ebbet?
You know, we're so sure that you're going to love the way you look that here at Great Clips, if you don't shut up, we're going to cut your hair off with a machete.
Nice callback. I'd forgotten about that scene already. If you're just joining us and you don't know what the hell we're talking about, the movie is Waterworld.
Waterworld. In a futuristic world where the polar ice caps have melted and made Earth a liquid planet, a beautiful barmaid, played by Gene Triplehorn, rescues a mutant seafarer, Kevin Costner, played by Kevin Costner, from a floating island prison. They escape, along with her young charge, Enola, played by Tina Mahariano, played by Tina Mahariano, and sail off aboard his ship. But the trio soon becomes the target of a menacing pirate, played by Dennis Hopper, who covets the map to dry land, which is tattooed on Enola's back.
All right. Thank you. Maybe the best intro he's ever done.
I love that. That was fantastic.
Almost as long as the movie itself.
That's true.
Which, by the way, is 130 minutes running time.
Oh, thank you very much. Now, I've said on the show before, I've made it known here and other places, that this is still a movie I enjoy. So I'm going to say that that hasn't changed. I still really like the movie. We'll get into why and whether I'm crazy, and you guys can try to convince me otherwise if you don't feel the same, but I'm excited to talk about it. Regardless, there are definitely some holes and some issues and some junk in this 1995 extremely expensive film. Second only to Titanic, by the way.
Wow.
At the time.
Something about water. Very expensive.
I can't remember. I don't know if Avatar exceeded the cost of Cameron's
Let's
previous
Let's take
movie.
A look at Wikipedia.
Go for it, Brian. While you're doing that.
You know, it always depends on how much you allow for the marketing budget.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people like to say a film costs whatever it costs to get in the can. Mm. And that's, you know, that's very different than if you also go and spend $150 million marketing something.
Yeah. It did make more than it cost to make.
Wow.
That doesn't make sense the way I said that.
A lot of movies have come and knocked Waterworld way down.
Oh, have they? Okay.
It's tied for 22nd place.
Oh, my Lord. What's right ahead of it? I'm just curious.
Wally.
Wally, really?
Golden Compass.
Are you looking at a list that's adjusted for inflation?
Whatevs. I'm looking at Wikipedia.
The hard thing to get your head around when you first start watching this film is how old it is. And you see some special effects tricks that make you go, oh yeah.
Yeah, like that, like the sail that shoots out. Remember that?
Well, that was incredible.
It was horrible. It looked like a CGI, the worst CGI I've ever seen. Total video game CGI. I was not impressed.
Avatar was number four, to answer your question.
Oh, all right. What's number one right now then?
Number one is Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah, with $300 million.
Most of that was to pay for, what's his name?
Johnny Depp's
trailer. Yeah, that's it.
Probably. There's some stories about this movie that are similar to that. But
pay to ruin and then pay to fix Jeffrey Rush's teeth.
Dude, I hated that movie. I hated that movie. Can I just make it really super clear right off the top here? I hate the third Pirates of the Caribbean movie so much. I love the first one. I thought the second one was okay. I thought the third one was a freaking most boring thing I'd ever watched.
Really? I was okay with it.
Ugh.
I hate it.
I slept through part of the third one.
Dude, I'm with you. I should have slept.
And I never do that, by the way. I am a movie fiend. I do not sleep through movies.
Yeah. It was incredibly boring. If that costs that much to make, I'm sorry, dude.
But enough about that movie.
Yeah, screw
that.
Let's talk about this movie. So, directed by Kevin Reynolds. Writers were Peter Radar and David Twalgler. But they don't list here that a bunch of other people came in, like Joss Whedon, to try to fix the script. And he said it was the worst 7 weeks of his life.
Can't do it.
That's 7 weeks on a script.
That's what he says. Rewrite after rewrite. It was sort of famous for these things. I mean, just some of this trivia just to swallow some of this down. Let's start with Anna Paquin was originally supposed to play Enola, which, by the way, backwards says alone.
Yes.
Ooh.
Isn't that weird?
Hubba hubba. I don't know why I'd say hubba hubba, but anyway.
Now that's weird.
It went from interesting to creepy in just over 2 seconds.
Rumors abound that director Kevin Reynolds walked off the set with 2 weeks of filming left, and Kevin Costner completed the film in his stead. Neither have ever confirmed this, but they did confirm they had a huge fight and a falling out, which is interesting because Kevin Costner demanded that Kevin Reynolds be the director. Like, they dumped a bunch of other people, including Robert Zemeckis for the shot, and went with Kevin Reynolds on his demanding. So I don't know what the hell happened there, but didn't turn out well for anyone. The Sunken City visited by the Mariner, which is, by the way, what he's known as. He doesn't really have a name, which is why Scott Fletcher called him Kevin Costner twice.
Yeah. He has no name. He comes in the night.
Yes. It was.
He's not the Submariner.
No.
Whole different thing.
But that city underwater, dude, was your stomping grounds. It was a digitally altered Denver, Colorado.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, very interesting.
Didn't recognize it.
You know, now that you say that, I recognize the coffee shop that I usually go to and the place where I accidentally dropped my ski boots. I remember that.
You remember that? Nice.
I can see why they went with Denver, because if the oceans rose 20,000 feet, Denver would be a lot closer to the surface than, say, Los Angeles.
That's true.
That's right.
It could have been any of that Rocky Mountain stuff would have been a great choice for that. And I guess the dry land they finally found, spoiler, according to the Japanese stuff or the Chinese stuff that was on her back, maybe it was Japanese, whatever, they're kind of the kanji stuff, that she was pointing to Everest. I guess that makes sense. You know,
because it would be the highest point. Yeah.
Yeah, but then wouldn't. Okay, let's not get into plot
holes. Well, the polars flipped.
Well, what I'm saying is when Gil...
Funny, because it looked just like Maui. It's funny.
I'm just saying, when Dances with Wolves pulls her down into the water with the big, with the stupid thing over her head, if it was really, if that dry land really is Everest, then just think how far down they'd have to go to get to the floor of Colorado, Denver, Colorado.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let me explain something. Let's go ahead and talk about our first complaint.
Do it.
Weirdness.
Like
scientifically impossible. Him taking her down in that little leather bubble thing.
And not spending 3 hours bringing her back.
Right.
Yeah. And not going to happen. I mean, the way they did that, even I was going, please, come on. Right. Scott, no, whatever.
You could go down a few hundred feet in a diving bubble, but they made it seem like it was a couple thousand feet.
Oh, yes. Totally. I mean, those skyscrapers, at least look how tall those skyscrapers are. I mean, because we're obviously talking about a city here. So, I mean, you've got a point of reference. So you definitely know at least has to be as high as those buildings higher. Otherwise, people would be hitting them.
Yeah, but speaking of that kind of problem, the whole premise is kind of busted, because if all the polar ice caps melted, literally melted, it would raise the sea level about 100 feet.
Yeah.
That would not cover up everything.
wouldn't cover up much. But
no.
Yeah, the idea in this world is that all sorts of water came from elsewhere. Like there were massive oceans of water under the polar ice caps or something.
Oh, I see. That's how they justify it. Interesting. Yeah.
I didn't catch that part. I totally missed it. I was too busy watching the guys underwater in their ski-doos.
Oh, yeah.
That awesome. Stuff's
waiting
awesome.
For the rope to get cut.
No, this is when I like this movie, okay? So this is where I'm going to have issues with people. I love the smokers. I love the Mad Max on water motif.
Yeah.
Like that, to me, that's what this movie is. I mean, it's Mad Max on water.
Oh, yeah.
And no apologies.
Instead of a car and a dog that he's really fond of, it's his boat and his lime tree he's really fond of.
Yeah.
And it's just the same movie. I mean, it really is. Yeah. But
there's a child fascinated by a music box in both movies. There's,
yes. Mm-hmm. And kind of wild-haired kid.
Pacifists that are, yes, you know, kind of hold up.
Yep. What else?
I can't wait to compare it directly to the movie The Postman. But let's go on with this comparison.
You're right,
right
about
now.
That. Yeah, the one chief comparison is that Kevin Costner is horrible in both. anyway, there's a couple of just tiny bits of trivia before we move on. Joss Whedon, I mentioned, but the Gene Hackman, James Caan, and Gary Oldman connection really flipped me out. Along with Gary Busey and Lawrence Fishburne, all those guys turned down the role of Deacon.
Yeah.
Every single one of them.
What's Which is good. Role? It's good because Dennis Hopper was perfect in this role.
Well, yeah. Dennis Hopper just looked like he was having some fun.
Exactly.
And which that's good enough, right? You're going to get Gene Hackman to feel good about any of this.
No.
You know? It's not going to happen. Gary Busey? Sure. Could have seen that. Totally could have seen Busey doing
it. Yeah. I can see that. I can see that.
But Fishburne? I don't know about that. Fishburne wasn't anybody really yet. He was Boys in the Hood dad or whatever at that point.
He would have been interesting. But it would not have been this movie.
Because there was no Matrix yet. I almost said Matrix. Why? Anyway. Gary Oldman, I could kind of see that, but he was pretty young then.
Yeah, Jack Black was in this.
Yeah, he was a pilot, right?
Yeah. Smoker plane pilot.
Freaking weird. It's weird to see him in that role. And when I read I kept trying to find it, and there were a couple of pilots, and I wasn't ever really sure if I was looking at Jack Black for sure.
Me too. Exactly. That's what I had to look it up. And I really don't fully believe it still, because I looked it up on the internet. I'm like, the internet's lying to me. That cannot have been Jack Black, but I guess it was.
Now, here's the bit that pissed everybody off and caused the production to go way over cost, way over time, and everything else, and lose its director and everything else. Kevin Costner was put up at a cost of $4,500 a night by himself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In an oceanfront villa in Hawaii with a butler, chef, and his own private swimming pool. In contrast, crew members were forced to live in uninsulated condominiums. Condoms with holes in it were provided. Just kidding. I made that part up. They were subject to temperature swings of up to 50 degrees. This inequality and kind of like difference in accommodations contributed to onset hostility and low morale. So way to go, Kevin.
The temperature swings must have been somewhere other than in the apartments or condos the other people were having to stay in, because temperature never changes in Hawaii.
Well, like, it must have been, right? Like maybe it was that they had terrible ventilation and the buildings got really hot in the day.
And what was happening was they were right near Kevin Costner's place and he kept turning the air on.
Is that it?
Blowing the exhaust in their face.
Yep. Anyway, opening the door.
Take that, sucker. See you tomorrow.
They obviously filmed bless you. Because my child is interrupting me there. They obviously filmed... Okay,
that was Brian, by the way.
A good portion of it.
I thought it was Dunaway. It's his own water world. He's trying to throw the child off the boat.
I thought it was Dunaway, and I thought he farted, so I'm way off.
They obviously filmed a huge portion of this film in a big pool, you know, and I'd really like to know some of the tricks they had to use to make it look like the ocean, because there were several times when the water was perfectly flat and it was obviously not salt water. Blah blah blah, but it still looked like very nicely like the ocean.
My favorite. Little,
I'm just curious about what hair gel he was using,
dude. Look,
sometimes like seaweed.
I am going to do some defending of Kevin Costner for a second. I have a weird like of everything he's in, not the movies themselves so much, but I like Kevin Costner as an actor. I think that
you're talking about like the zeitgeist of the film. He chooses films that have this look and feel that are peculiar.
I agree. Yeah. I agree that that's part of it for sure. I love Dances with Wolves. I thought that, I feel like Silverado is better because of him. I think there's just a lot of good things that can be said about Kevin Costner. I just like the way he looks. I still think Open Range is one of the best Westerns ever made.
Agreed.
We've talked about that before. So I think Costner gets a bad rap a lot. He's probably a douche in real life. I don't know.
Or smart. I mean, he was the only one smart enough to freaking get a piece of this pie. I mean, come on. I know it might have been, what'd you say, how much it was a night?
$4,500 a night.
All right, come on. Add
yeah, but he put
up.
His
how
own.
Long
but he
how
put
long
his,
was the movie?
He
I mean,
put,
come on.
He put his own $20 million into the film's production.
Yeah.
So he made some sacrifices. He worked 6 days a week. I mean, all that stuff, whatever. But
he's just a smart businessman.
He's kind of full of himself.
I guess that, but you know.
I was in Bull Durham.
So if we had, so I want to ask around the table, we'll start with Ibbot. Do you guys have a favorite Costner movie? So Ibbot, what would you pick? If someone said, all right, we're banishing you to a desert island.
And you can only take one Kevin Costner movie.
Yes.
You'd be like, what the hell? Am I going to hell?
You know what? It's funny. God, I don't know if it would be my favorite, but one that I really, really like is Tin Cup. Mm. And I'm not a big golf nut. But that's a fun movie. You
it
know,
had Cheech Marin in it, right?
Cheech Marin and I think Rene Russo.
Yeah. Back when she was.
Yeah. But no, it's a fun movie. It's, you know, it's no Bull Durham. I think Bull Durham probably is a much better film. But as far as, you know, just kind of a fun film, I think Tin Cup would be the one I'd probably take.
Randy, what would you take?
I'm going to defend The Postman.
Oh, wow.
Costner directed it. I really, really like the look and feel of the movie. It's paced really nicely. There are some long, gorgeous cinematography, you know, around some really exciting action. And I don't think that it's a bad film. I don't think it's got a bad script. I don't think it's acted badly at all. There are a few tremendous performances in that film. And I only am taking it because I know Scott will defend Open Range for me. Mm. And I can't think of another one.
You and I will jointly choose Open Range, but then we'll have a secondary, and that one's yours. Dunaway, what's your pick before I tell you, man?
Hands down, The Bodyguard.
Oh, wow. Oh, I forgot all about that, dude.
Really?
I don't like The Bodyguard. Shut up.
Hey, come on. Maybe Costner really brought the most out of Whitney Houston.
Yeah. Let's put it this way. There's only one Kevin Costner movie I own on Laserdisc or anything else for that
Dances
matter.
Dances with Wolves.
And that's Waterworld. And I will give you my top three real quick just to say it. Waterworld, Robin Hood. I really liked him in this. I think he was a great Robin Hood. Mm. And
terrible.
And,
but yeah, go ahead.
I like that. Those two. And what was the other one?
I don't know.
That's no way in a bottle. No.
You know, it's funny how we're not talking about Dances with Wolves for whatever
Dances
reason.
Dances with Wolves. That's the one I do like because she goes John Dunbar. John Dunbar.
That's why you like it. It's a hell of a movie.
A film where a single actor has been more awarded for, you know, dominating his movie than Dances with Wolves. I mean, he just, you know.
I totally agree. It has. It's underappreciated today. But I would, barring all of those, I want the first half of Waterworld because I'm not as fond as the second half. But I love the first half. And my other choice would be The Untouchables. I thought Untouchables was awesome. Mm-hmm.
And it's also kind of interesting. None of us are talking about JFK, which
is arguably
his best acting performance.
Well, geez, why don't we just marry Kevin Costner?
But I also
Perfect World too. I forgot about that.
Perfect World, right? But no, I love 13 Days too. By the way, terrible accent in it, but that's a great movie.
He has terrible accents always.
He tried to pull one out here a little bit. Did you hear it? A little bit of Irish for a while.
Yeah. At the end, it was a little bit of Irish sometimes. Sometimes it was Southern. Yep. And sometimes I don't know what the crap he was doing.
Then they got the real Irish guy out going, "You ever seen Paper?" And I'm going, "Dude, you cannot."
You ever seen Paper? Paper, Paper.
You cannot hold up to that guy. Anyway,
that dude was fun.
Looks like freaked out Lindsey Buckingham.
Totally, dude.
That guy put in a great performance though, as someone who'd been by himself forever.
Oh, he stole it.
I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, I feel like
that's the reason why Kevin Costner stabbed him.
Yeah, anytime I have a friend
still in the scene.
I have a friend named Andrew Adams, and he and I talk all the time, and we reminisce about stuff we saw in the 90s, and this always comes up where I'll go, "Oh, remember Waterworld?" And the first thing out of his mouth is, "You ever seen Paper?" I mean, we do not forget that guy.
which is also right out of Dances with Wolves, right? You got Paper? I know you got Paper over there.
Yep.
And The Postman. Right,
they're taking a crap at the beginning?
Yeah, David Jeter, Paper, and Kevin Costner's ego are a common thread through all his movies.
Dude, Michael Jeter was really good.
I keep saying David Jeter. Michael's
David Jeter, probably not so much. I mean,
yeah,
he would have been good in Bull Durham.
There you go.
I always get those two mixed up every time in my head. Anyway, all right.
Can we talk about the ship for a minute?
The what?
The ship.
Trimaran?
Oh, the ship with a P. Got it.
Yeah.
Go. Yeah.
The ship.
Yeah, what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say that is one of the top most awesome ships in movie cinema history. I mean, that thing is just bad A.
And they make sure, if you don't believe that, that they make you believe that by giving you these long helicopter shots with this really glorious music that, you know, like swells to let you know you're supposed to appreciate it.
Well, look, I mean, much like what's the movie with the helicopter we saw? I forgot already.
Blue Thunder.
Like Blue Thunder, or unlike Blue Thunder, where it should have been the focus of the movie, a good movie has an inanimate object, oftentimes a car, sometimes a horse, sometimes it's a gun or a robot. Yeah. That's an important freaking role. And this is a case where they nailed that. Like, that thing is so much a part of him and what made him cool and gave him his power, for lack of a better word. I love that. That was great. So I agree with you, Brian.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought, and the way they just shot all those scenes of him, you know, like a sliding down the sail. I mean, I want that ship.
It's piratey.
It's very piratey.
Yeah, very piratey.
And why do you have to have limes, my kids ask? Why is he freaking out because he stole the limes? I'm like, because he's going to get scurvy.
Yeah,
that's right.
And nobody has.
I'm not even going to think about what they're not teaching you in school.
But it's also because that thing is a super rare freaking thing, like an actual growing plant of any kind.
Yeah.
You would guard that. I don't care if it grew poisonous mushrooms. You'd keep it.
Now, that's what pissed me off about this movie. This is like, he is so seat of his pants, fly off the handle. Hey, we just got away from the smokers like 5 seconds ago. I got stabbed and shot straight through the back. Let me dive you down a couple of thousand feet and leave the girl by herself.
Yeah, that was a little hard to take.
Right, because every time he leaves the boat, some shit gone. Happens upstairs.
Yeah,
that's right.
But that's when the movie
never leave the boat again.
Yeah, but that's when the movie went downhill for me, and always has been. As much as I enjoy my time with Waterworld, each time I see it, and I watch it like once a year. I love it right up until the time.
Once a year?
Yeah.
Wait.
Easily.
What?
Easily once a year.
Oh, man. No.
And this year? And this year, twice, dude. Twice. Because I saw this back in March.
In a year, but not once a year. Like, I don't even get to see my favorite Christmas movie every year.
I don't know how it happens, but yeah, every once in a while, just Waterworld comes up like, yeah, we should rent that or watch that or stream that or whatever. So it comes up all the time.
You think you've seen it like 15 times?
Oh, easily.
Oh my God.
Easily 15, maybe more. Maybe 16. Maybe 16, because I watched it twice this year, once for me and then once for the show.
You know, no matter how many times you rewatch it. Yeah, no, do you pick out something exactly? Is it like the boobs?
Yeah, do you see something new every time?
No, that's the only problem. What I do see every time is that the latter half of the film kind of sucks. So from Colorado forward, I don't like it as much. Up to that point, I'm really enjoying it. So for whatever that's worth, that's the strength of the movie is the first half.
Yeah,
it gets too much of just a big yelling, smoky, stupid match, you know.
Yeah, once they destroy the boat, I'm pretty much out. Spoilers.
I just can't believe, like, because this is a film where they literally have Michael Jeter driving around an airship, which should have been called The Convenience. Like, how many times could you
he
possibly
found
watch that?
Him because it was on fire? Otherwise, he would have never been able to find him.
Yeah.
They
explained that
ever.
Very clearly in the movie.
They didn't. They may have explained it, but that doesn't make it right.
Yeah, good point.
Should have just made it a gyrocopter and been a little more obvious about it.
Yeah.
I can explain Pastafarianism, but that doesn't make it.
But see, that's what I would think. I would be like, if I'm in a balloon, and the only thing that really scares the hell out of me is smokers, I'm definitely not going towards something smoking.
Towards the smoke, twice. It's not twice, just that he... Okay. I give up.
By the way,
and my kids asked me, they said, how is that balloon staying up? What's it filled with? I'm like, I don't know, magic.
You know what I love about kids is they're asking the cool, innocent questions. I'm asking, where are they getting all these cigarettes 400 or 500 years after the water filled everything up?
I love those cigarettes, man.
Where are they getting that from? Nobody's manufacturing cigarettes.
Yeah.
And
maybe they're smoking seaweed. Has that occurred to you that they could be smoking blue green algae?
Because baseball superstar David Jeter told me early in the film that he says it's been like hundreds of years, right? Since anybody's
once
seen
again,
land.
Once again, this is a film that was made before Joe Esterhaus told Hollywood they couldn't have everybody smoking all the time, and it just didn't occur to people that they'd be creating plot holes, right?
Yeah, good.
They just felt like smoking was cool.
Yeah.
There was a lot of smoking in this movie.
It's kind
of
like lighting in a film. Smoking used to be. It's like, well, you got to have it. This is just smoking. Who cares where it came from? Now we look at it and go, dude, where the hell are you getting these fresh packs of Camels? It's really weird. Hey guys, breaking in real quick to talk about Audible.com. They are once again sponsoring the show, and I want to recommend something cool on Audible. So, if you're into movies and you like Alfred Hitchcock movies, then you should like Alfred Hitchcock's Radio Movie Collection. It is awesome. Narrated by a whole bunch of different people, and it is reenactments of stuff. All done in 1948. Most of it anyway, and it is really, really cool. The official description is: this collection of radio dramatizations from Master of Suspense Alfred Hitchcock features many of the classic film's original stars. Awesome collection. Way cheap on Audible. You can get it for like $8, or for free if you haven't registered already. So do it now. Go to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack and get this or any book out of 75,000 titles for free. That's audiblepodcast.com/filmsack.
And Smeet, that was good.
Smeet.
So, yes. so here's a question. Yeah, but let me ask you, and then we pass around if we want. But
yes.
What makes a good? I'm an unabashed fan of end of world movies. I don't care what they are. I loved Book of Eli.
Book of Eli.
I loved Book of Eli. I loved
The Road.
The Road. I love the Dark Tower books.
<Roadwear. laughs> I could do this all day long.
I love the Mad Dark Max. Tower books. I love all that stuff. Like, you could just, it doesn't matter. It's like Westerns for me. I'll watch it. In fact, Westerns are kind of that anyway, you know?
Yeah. Most post-apocalyptic films are Westerns.
Yeah, basically. This thing was kind of pirate Western in a way.
Wait. Mm-hmm. There is no law. Apocalyptic film that isn't a Western, now that I think about it.
Yeah. I think that's fair to say. So, knowing that about me, what does Brian Ibbett like? Like, what makes a good end of world apocalyptic dystopian future movie?
You know, it's for me, it's the little pockets of civilization. So like, you've got all this desolation that the main character traverses across to get to wherever he's going or to do whatever he does. And usually he's like a solitary soul himself, right? He's like this mm-hmm. guy walking around. Maybe he's got a dog. Maybe he's got a kid. Who knows? But
a donkey,
sure. And then he finds these little pockets of civilization where people have not just kind of gathered together, but kind of tried to recreate what they once had with the torn up bits of world around them as kind of the ornaments around them. And boy. I think I just wrote a book.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
You just explained the postman.
No, Randy's right. The postman is cool, and the postman's cool for one reason and one reason only. The head of the bad people used to be a copier salesman. That kind of stuff is awesome. You know, where they twist stuff and flip it on its head and say, that's why I'm really, really into the new Walking Dead series and why I love the comic so much, is that it is going down that path of recreating civilization. You don't have stuff. You got to find your way. You got to make your way. You got to make decisions you would have never made in civilized society. And that kind of stuff is infinitely interesting to me. And this movie has a lot of that. And so that's why I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, what would it be like if a guy had gills? What would it be like if all the dead people had to go in a big yellow gelatinous pit? You know,
what's it all about?
See, what you're talking about is where the movie fails for me, because the question, what would it be like if a guy had gills, could have been so much better answered.
Oh, yeah.
That could have been so much cooler. Yeah. And it was kind of just a film before its time in that regard.
Yeah.
Because instead of like, not enough gills for his body
that's what
mass.
I'm saying.
All right.
It should have been that he had these huge flaps on his chest and his back. And they had to rip his clothes off to see them. And there had to be really awesome effects for you to, you know, catch the opening and closing of them and whatever. But
all looks like right now is like he's got a bad ear infection.
There are a couple of instead of a
cave that looks like a vagina at the end of his ear.
Like, I know it would have been a completely different way of telling the story, but there shouldn't have been this whole thing shouldn't have been based on an oil shortage. Oil's long gone in this world, you know, completely. And it should have been more like they'd figured out nukes. And they were kind of powered on wind and sun and nuclear.
That's a really good point. You know what? You have just encapsulated my overall plot hole problem, which is they couldn't decide whether they wanted to pretend like this had happened anciently and call people the ancients and all this.
Yeah.
Or make it seem more recent. So we have skinny old man at the bottom of the barrel telling you how much oil you have left.
It's hilarious. That
works if this happened 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it doesn't if it happened hundreds of years ago. And if these guys are truly living off oil that they've had for hundreds of years, that means they're getting it from a source that isn't in the water, which means they would already have dry land. They wouldn't be trying to follow a girl around with a weird tattoo.
Right.
Isn't that a book? There's a book called Follow the Girl Around.
The Girl with the Weird Tattoo. Yes.
With Weird Tattoo. To jump to the very end of the film, this film takes a lot of convenience and lenience with the driving of the next shot. So, like, for example, at the very end of the film, they found dry land. Sorry. I guess we agreed we're always going to spoil the films, but they found dry land. They're on Maui. Everybody who was there has died while they were waiting to be found. And Kevin Costner can't be on dry land. He's getting land sickness.
Sickness, exactly. Sickness. Yeah.
So he's determined to take off in another boat, right? And it's like the next day off he goes, and he's got the perfect little dwarf lime tree, and he's got, like, it would have taken forever to get provisioned for what he's doing.
Especially the lime tree.
Like, right.
Yeah.
And it's like he's gone the very day after they found dry land or something.
Yeah, that was dumb.
And that's just ridiculous. Especially as smart as he is about living on the ocean, he would have taken a long time. And there's a lot of stuff like that, you know, like the refueling it would have taken for the smokers to do what they do is just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, and to have jet skis that have lasted so long and kept up so well that they can truly be underwater for about 30 minutes before they're launched onto their unsuspecting foe.
That's awesome.
Which it was actually a really cool scene. I mean, if you suspend your disbelief.
Oh, yeah, I love that. Yeah.
I mean, it's an awesome movie.
No, that's what you want in Road Warrior. It's crazy bald guys with half a shoulder pad riding around on fixed up trucks, you know?
You know what? And why couldn't they figure out in Road Warrior to just make a vehicle that's a freaking ramp? I mean, I love the fact that they had that in this. It's like, oh, ramp, zoop, right over into the atoll.
Yeah.
But Road Warrior, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm just going to yell in this microphone with my hockey mask.
just walk
and
away.
And hope that you guys come out.
Just walk away.
You know, by the same token of convenience in Waterworld, there is a lot of metal. The whole atoll is made of metal. They're driving boats that are made of metal, and they're firing rounds that are dropping metal shells by the billion.
Yep.
And they just can't say that they would be having this horrible shortage of fresh water, and that's stupid, by the way, and a shortage of petroleum, but they have no problem with metal. Plenty of metal. We just drop the shells right off.
If you've ever parked a Volkswagen by the beach for about 3 hours, you come back, the damn thing is rusted. How does this not happen?
Well, look, Randy makes a very interesting point that I want to just talk about for a second, and that is, okay, well, you're claiming that you can't get all, you know, for example, the movie is a showcase of metal usage, but then you look at the trivia and you find out that during the production of the film, they cleaned out all the excess scrap metal and steel of the entire, all the islands of Hawaii.
Yeah.
And had to order stateside, had to go to California to get more. So they can't even keep enough metal. Oh, the irony hurts. Somebody call that Canadian chick who sings Bitterest Pill. What's her name? Tell her that's real irony. Not a wedding day.
Alanis.
Not rain on your wedding day. That's just bad luck, you dummy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, that's too funny. Now my 9-year-old, even speaking of plot holes, when Kevin Costner was scaling the side of the boat, he said, oh, that's convenient that all those holes are right there for him to climb up.
It's like a video game. Right? It's like
I said, one of two things is going on here. Either he is real observant or he's been hanging out with his dad too much.
It's like a session of, what's her name? Lara Croft or something, where she got all these cliffs that are so obvious, the things you got to grab onto.
That's anyway. Exactly one jump with the way.
How convenient. All right, well, let's do some clips. There are plenty to be found in this movie, and I captured tons of them. You'll notice I kind of trail off toward the halfway mark because, again,
because your interest waned.
Yeah, and I don't think
I'm not catching anymore.
There isn't a lot of good audio in the last half. It's mostly just and just people yelling. Mm-hmm. That was my impression of the terrible soundtrack. Let's start with the intro narration from Don LaFontaine. Check it out.
The future. The polar ice caps have melted, covering the earth with water. Those who survived have adapted to a new world.
All right, that may not be Don LaFontaine. Maybe that other guy
certainly sounds like him.
It sounds like him, and immediately I'm like, am I watching a trailer?
You know, I know.
Has Don LaFontaine done anything besides trailers? Has he actually narrated a film
before? I don't think so.
I don't think it may be one of the first times. I mean, he's done other stuff, but I'm sure.
Which was very confusing for me, because if I'd been seeing this at the theater, I'd have been, you know, because he probably narrated at least two or three before that that came on.
Yeah.
In a world made of water.
Where water's everywhere.
In a logo you thought you were familiar with. Actually, it's one of the things I liked about the intro was that logo change for Universal. That's a pretty clever idea. I mean, it seems almost so obvious that if you didn't do it, you'd be stupid.
Yeah. I love it when they do that too.
Yeah, I like
me
that.
Too.
Paramount
with
does
the Paramount.
That.
Yeah, the Indiana Jones films.
Utah Connection. That mountain's in that mountain's just north of Ogden, Utah, by the way. Anyway, giant stars don't come zooming at it though.
Oh yeah.
Just to clear that up. All right, speaking of the musical score, I thought it was terrible. It sounded like a Harry Potter fight. I hated it. I think it should have been like.
Didn't know you had such disdain for Harry Potter.
Well,
fights.
notice this at the end of his narration. Okay, that stuff's cool.
I like it.
Right? It's kind of like I'm in the hallway of the Battlestar Galactica looking for Starbuck. What the hell's going on? Right? That kind of tribal awesome.
Sounds like there's an immunity challenge on Survivor coming up.
Interesting that you just named BSG, because I named it when I was watching the film. I told everybody in the room that sounds like BSG music.
Yeah, totally. It's that style. And I love that style. I think it's a perfect match. But then later they decide to get all hot Hollywood-y, and they got rid of the John Isham. No, what's the guy's name? David Jeter, we'll call him.
Derek
Jeter. What did I say, David? Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Michael Jeter.
But no, they moved to this more like traditional score of the time, and I hated it. And here's just a piece of it right here. Hurry, Harry, the Voldemort's getting away.
Hey, we have this leftover music from Cutthroat Island. You want to use it?
It's interesting that you're talking about Harry Potter, because James Newton Howard could totally score Harry Potter movies.
Yeah.
He'd be perfect for them.
Yeah, he could.
I wasn't bothered by this. I thought it was actually, it kept me in the movie. Exactly. What Will was saying. I agree 100%. And I didn't think it was that bad a place myself. I thought it was all right. It could have been a lot worse. Let's put it that way.
It could have been worse, sure. It could have been one of those.
I'm not used to this caliber of decent music in a film sack movie, to tell you the truth.
The point is, the music is all wrong for the film. It's great music.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's fantastic music. It just sounds like it's left over from Dragonheart, and it doesn't match what you're seeing.
Yeah. Mm. Ooh, I like Dragonheart. We should watch that. Anyway.
Totally.
Talking dragons. Brian, there was no cool 80s synth music in this movie, unfortunately.
No sparks, no gleaming spires.
No Kenny Loggins.
I always
no
listen. Kenny Loggins. Oh, don't worry. We have a bevy of Kenny Loggins coming soon.
We got it coming, baby.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Moving on to the pure dirt. First we need to meet the sheriff. The sheriff of this town. Like you were talking about, Ibbot, there's a town floating on water. But have these elders that are constantly putting people in yellow goo, and there's a sheriff there, and we get to meet him right here.
You know me?
I know what you are.
Good. And you know if you look for trouble while you're here, you'll find more than you can handle. You got 2 hours.
I'll only need one.
I'm like, dude, you should tell him. It's funny. I'm like, dude, you should tell me who you are, because I don't know who you are, because I was a little confused about that whole part.
Well, he's a sheriff, right?
Well, yeah, I realized that after about 2 or 3 minutes later. I'm like, oh, I get it. He's a sheriff. But I had forgotten.
I think they're counting on people going, I see Westerns. I've even seen this guy in Young Guns. I know what this means. He's a guy in charge of the peace, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And you know I am, right?
And I love that. Yeah. Love it. Love it. Bring
the whole atoll thing is really, really cool. I mean, as destructible as it was, or indefensible as it was with the smokers, it was a really cool place.
Yep.
Yes.
Speaking of cool places, Gene Triplehorn, you know?
Oh, my gosh.
She's kind of cute.
Yeah.
Take that to a cool place there, Scott.
Yeah.
She did not. That was not her. That was a body double.
No.
Yes. She said that she would not do a nude scene in this film. That is a body double. She handpicked.
She would get She would get naked in front of everybody, but not Kevin Costner.
Yeah, I'll do Cheech Marin. I'll get in front of whoever, but not Kevin Costner. So they let her do that. But the funny thing is, before and after this film, she did plenty of nude scenes, so it's weird that she had this problem.
She was just pissed. She was staying in those little condo things.
It's cold in here.
It's a very ham-handed trope. The we have to breed right now thing. Yeah. And the fact that she in the script drops trow and is like, here I am naked in front of you, that makes no sense. And they could have actually done it a lot more seductively and still gotten to the same point with him refusing her advance without the nudity. So I could understand her making the case for, hey, this could be a better scene, but I'm not going to do it the way you want because it could be so much better.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I mean, that's sad.
It's really saying Kevin, is it's PG-13 side boob and butt. You don't get that very often.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was just demanded by, it was just one more Kevin Costner demand. I demand at least one woman drop her clothes in front of me. So
I don't care who it is. If Triple Horn's not going to do it, get me an extra.
That scene in The Postman is with the woman and her husband.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, that's right.
That out.
That's right. That's a good point.
Same scene in The Postman, but woman and husband are asking the Mariner Postman.
We need to do The Postman.
To do the deed.
Mm-hmm. We need to do The Postman.
Yeah, definitely do The Postman.
I've never seen The Postman, so we definitely need to do it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm with Dunaway.
Plus, we have, there's all kinds of cool Ibbitt stuff in that movie because you got, what's his name?
Is Kenny Loggins in that?
Free Falling.
Yeah, you got Tom Petty.
Does Robin Zander sing a song on the soundtrack?
I wouldn't be surprised if there's actually some like live music in The Postman that's really cool. Like they come into a dance party and there's people playing. Yeah. And it's got Lorenz Tate. Everybody loves Lorenz Tate.
Postman dance party.
Nice. All right, moving on to Pure Dirt. I love this scene. I just like the idea of somebody taste testing dirt to see if it's real.
Yeah, yeah.
And I captured a little audio. Check it out.
Pure dirt. 3.2 kilos. How'd you come by so much of it?
Another 8, hole 30 horizons west of here.
Where'd they get it?
They didn't say.
I just love how he's like, Pierre Dart, where'd you get it? Oh my gosh, you got the biggest nerd running the dirt counter ever.
I'm telling you, he's full of crap anyway. He doesn't know what, he's never even seen dirt. He's so full of it.
Here I captured it separately so I could always play this now.
Pure dirt.
Just play that anytime I want.
Pure dirt.
Pure dirt.
Awesome. I love that.
I like that guy a lot. Anyway, there's
I like how during the first 3 or 4 seconds of that clip, it sounds like there's a bunch of dudes having sex in the background.
Kind of had that experience.
Like, seriously, play the first few seconds again now.
Let's try it. Let's try it out. Here we go.
Pure dirt.
Oh, my gosh. Now I can't think of that the same ever again. He comes to find out while he's on top of this floating barge of a town that they really only want him for his seed. And they say so. The elders say so right here.
All we want is your seed.
We can look to our own for impregnation, but too much of that sort of thing gets undesirable.
What did that mean?
Token Fu Manchu there.
Yes, exactly. Where's the golden child?
I like that guy. He's the one that decided he was a mutant and started yelling it. Mutation! At the top of his lungs. Kind of liked him. And I've seen him in 100 things. Like episodes of MASH and, you know, the stuff. And I'd love to see. I like that guy. He was all right. But the seed thing kind of creeped me out. All right.
Yeah. Anybody. Yeah. That's just going to creep you out anytime. We want your seed. No.
Yeah. Has anyone ever asked you for your
seed?
You
don't have any dirt to plant it in. I know.
I've never heard anyone ever ask anyone for their seed in real life.
No, I know it. Like, what?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
If that ever happens, run away from that place you are where it happened. Don't be there.
No matter where it is.
Michael Jeter introduces himself with this scene.
Oh, fish rot. I'd be surprised if there weren't others. And if there aren't, there will be eventually. Anyway, I come here because I need to ask you a question. Where did your dirt come from? Is it from dry land? Do you know what this is? The ancients, they did something terrible, didn't they, to cause all this water hundreds of years ago.
If I tell you, will you open this lock? haven't a key.
Okay, what accent is that?
It's Italian-Hungarian.
Dert. That's awesome, man. I don't think it's real, but I like it.
No,
yeah, they talked about that several times. Talked about
the
different
language called though.
Well, they had it.
It's Portuguese Greek.
That's right.
Yeah, that was awesome. And they were, but the thing is, when he was yelling out to people, according to the trivia, he's doing Hindu or Hindi or something.
Isn't that great? I mean, it's the future. No one's seen paper, but they speak Portuguese, which is a dead language. But okay, whatever.
Yeah, and it's a strange combination of two things that probably shouldn't be together. Chocolate and peanut butter, I guess. It worked out. You ever seen paper? All right, moving on. Death sentence. Another favorite scene of mine where Fu Manchu is telling Costner where to go. And here it is.
After considerable deliberation of the evidence at hand, it is our decision that this muto does indeed constitute a threat. Therefore, in the interest of public safety, he is hereby sentenced to be recycled in a customary fashion. Proceed.
I'm sorry.
Wait for it. Wait for it. There's something about that really grossed me out. That stuff he was in, and when the cage was actually sinking and stuff, really got me. Like that's
once he actually went under, that was really creepy when he's really trying to reach for that lock. That was really effective. Yeah.
Well, if that is all just reconstituted people juice.
Yeah.
That's gross.
That's nasty.
How'd they get the first guy in there?
That's what I'm saying.
You're just gonna sit at the bottom of this pit. It's gonna fill up eventually, but
but the whole thing makes no sense. Like if you're going to really reuse the human body, you start using it fresh. The last thing you would want to do is somehow, you know, deconstruct it.
Well, maybe
right? They
have nothing to water or fertilize.
Yeah, that's basically saying.
So you would want to squeeze all the water out of the human body. You'd have some fresh water. You'd want to use the skin for leather. Blah 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 blah. You wouldn't want to dissolve it.
Yeah, and wouldn't you just if you were going to do that, then just throw them off the edge.
Yeah,
sink them.
Yeah.
That's what they're smoking. They're drying that stuff, and they're smoking people.
Oh, my gosh. Dude. Soylent Yellow is people?
No, it's green. Yellow. It's actually green, though, in the movie. That's what's funny about it.
Is it green? It looked yellow to me.
Mine look yellow.
Yellow
you may want to adjust your color.
A guy I work with for some side stuff, he's colorblind as a bat. That doesn't make sense.
I hate colorblind bats.
But he is the worst. Like we would play Unreal Tournament way back in the day and it's red versus blue and he could never tell which side he was on. It was the worst experience ever. Anyway, moving on. Let the yelling begin is what I titled it. But I think this is when the guy, right as they're putting him to death, notices that there's smokers on the horizon and then loses his shit as soon as he sees these guys on the horizon. And it's really funny. Check it out. And that's where the movie kind of starts doing that full time.
Yeah. Is it not weird in movies when they do that, when someone's almost about to die, then somebody else shows up and they totally forget about trying to kill somebody?
Yep. Well, I mean, in this case, they just left him hanging and then he didn't fall in until that cannon idiot hit him, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was great.
But that is a trope that I can't stand anymore.
Me too.
I will not accept it. This is an older film, so I'm all right with it in this movie. But if you make a movie where I'm about to shoot somebody and something unexpected happens on the horizon, I'm going to go ahead and pull the trigger and then deal with what's going on the horizon.
Yeah. It seems like the efficacious thing to do.
Drop everything.
Even the guy. Drop the guy you're trying to kill. Anyway. All movies do it to some degree, you have to admit. At least all movies who are aimed at general audiences and are big blockbusters, they all do this. Like they do it on Avatar, does it? And I loved Avatar, but they did stuff.
Yeah.
Although I'm kind of having a falling out with Avatar.
Uh-oh.
I'm mad about what Avatar did to the 3D world. I feel
is it the fecal matter on the 3D glasses?
No, it's that too. You and I talked about that. But Avatar made it so that everybody thought 3D was the thing to do, and now they're all butt rushing to make terrible 3D.
Oh, well, You can't blame Avatar for that, though.
No.
No,
you can blame
or thank Avatar for being an impetus to push it forward and to bring it to the front and say, wow, look what can be done. It's just nobody's doing it.
Yeah.
I hate 3D.
Yeah, but people are getting wise. I mean, you know, you bring up the fact that a movie like Clash of the Titans had 3D added to it afterwards. And now I don't think I'll ever go see another movie that 3D was added to afterwards. Maybe the Star Wars movies when they come out. Well, probably. But for the most part, if I hear that the 3D was added after the fact, I'm probably not going to go. So thank Clash of the Titans for that.
Yeah, that's true.
Interesting.
People are getting wise.
They'll know, you know, they'll be able to separate the
I think
the,
at some
the
point
ship
they're
from Shinola.
They're going to get wise to the fact that 3D sucks generally, that it's a fad and that it's going to go away again. That's what people will get wise to, because as cool as it was to see Avatar that way, I saw Avatar again without 3D and I preferred it. Mm-hmm. And I get headaches. It's just too weird how many different people observe it in a different way. And after Brian telling me, Dunaway telling me that there is fecal matter on every pair of 3D glasses made.
Where did that come from?
We're not going to perpetuate that. But yeah, I was watching, I forget exactly what it was, like a Dateline or something. And they were talking about they had went to local theaters and they had picked up glasses from all these different local theaters. And some of them, even like the Real D, the ones that are coming in the plastic containers, they picked them up and they sent them off to a lab to be tested. And, you know, they found stuff on them like bacteria and stuff that you just would expect not to be on there.
And poo.
And they finally said they also found some fecal matter on some of them. So,
God.
So don't think you're going to get fecal matter every time you get a pair of 3D glasses. But do know that it could be a possibility. And, you know, I'm not just calling it Real D here because we're talking about just everybody out there. But you would think Real D, and since it comes in a plastic wrap, you're thinking.
Yeah, exactly. It should be sanitized.
There should be nothing on them.
Yeah, but everything we get in bags has poo in it.
including your Whopper. Send it off, but it has poo in it.
All right. Your Whopper.
Including your ketchup.
Actually, the ketchup packet you're opening with your mouth? Yeah.
I could tell you a story about those. Anyway. I won't tell you now because we're talking about a movie. Let's move on to him checking out his new eye. And this was some funny swearing, I thought.
What do you say, Toby? The truth.
Looks like shit.
That's why I love children, no guile. It does look like shit. And it feels like cold shit.
Yeah. Dennis Hopper, dude.
That was awesome.
Letting it rip.
Why didn't they put a fisheye in there?
I don't know. Maybe what was that thing?
That would have been so much more Waterworld.
I agree. A little fleshy, from one of those giant mutant whales that supposedly evolved.
Totally.
Yeah, that we only see once.
Yeah.
They apparently sleep 23 3/4 hours a day.
Right.
Yeah.
They're asleep. We're good. Don't worry about it.
That's fine. Yeah. Trust me.
And conveniently, they were awake at that moment that he needed to teach her a lesson about getting food.
Yeah,
that was convenient. Way to go, Kevin. All right. Both Kevins. I'm going to call them the Kevins. This is the little tiny dude down inside the oil tanker. I had to have him on here. Check him out.
Yes.
Your Deacon Ship. Hello. Good morning. Or night. Whichever the case may be.
What is it? I'm a busy man.
I thought you should know. We're down to exactly 4 feet. 9 inches of black stuff.
All right, you're in charge of your stores of oil, and you don't even know what it's called.
I don't care. I love that guy. That was brilliant. That made the whole movie worth watching.
You think so?
Yeah.
Little skinny, scrawny, 90-year-old man.
If you don't see anything else, you have to see that scene.
All right.
Well, especially when he gets blown up and he goes, thank God.
Thank God. I know it.
That was pretty good. I forgot about that. But that That was in the half of the movie where I was kind of drifting off. Okay, moving on. This is 2 seconds is all, but it's great because it's Gene Triplehorn starting a sentence normally and then ending it with a major scream right into Kevin Costner's ear about food. Check it out.
Maybe we add some food.
Okay, just one more time.
That's
just for
one
fun.
You got to keep on the shelf.
I'm
going
to say we need to keep that one.
One more time.
Maybe we add some food.
I wish he was more. I wish he was more like coherent on the maybe he has some part, but it's still great. All right. This is when we first meet the crazy guy in the boat. He wants to know if he has any resin, and the crazy guy shows us how crazy he is by muttering by himself. Check it out.
We got any resin?
wrestle. He's got to be out of his mind. He's out of his mind completely, Russell.
Does anybody in this movie, is it ever explained what resin is?
Nope. I could only assume it was like for gears and stuff. Maybe they...
No, he had a hole in his boat.
So it's never explained.
We know what resin is.
Well, yeah, but resin that we know.
We know what resin is for several different, completely different purposes. Like, you know, resin you put on the bowstring of a violin. So, but it's never explained, Scott.
I agree.
He constantly talks about his patch.
And you actually want to watch this movie every year.
It's because there's a hole in the boat.
He does ask for it a lot.
That's the problem. He's trying to patch his boat. That's what he keeps talking about.
There's a hole in the boat. Oh, man.
There's a hole in your boat.
I was trying to find that clip and I can't find it. Instead, we'll hear this.
Ho, 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 ho.
Rain.
All right. Sorry. Okay. Where are we? We're almost done with these. Paper. You ever seen paper?
Paper. Have you ever seen paper? Look at it. Smell it.
Dude, he was so into that paper.
He was seriously into the paper.
To me, it's the seminal moment of the film. Well, getting asked for your seed is very seminal, but also... Get it?
Waka.
Waka, waka. Okay, this is the part where Deacon is mean to the girl. And again, note where this happens, because it's my last clip, and I pretty much was done with the film at this point in terms of capturing audio, but here it is.
Have you ever heard any of your friends talk about it? You know, like your mommy or your pet fish? He say anything?
Should make fun of him. He wouldn't like it.
Girl... give a shit what he'd like. He took out my eye. And if I ever see him again, I'm gonna cut open his head and I'm gonna eat his brain. You think he'd like that?
Can't kill him. He's even meaner than you are.
But he's not here. And he ain't coming. And no one's gonna save you.
He'll come for me. He will.
Well, then you better tell me what I want to know. Oh, he can save what's left of you in a goddamn jar.
Dude, what a bastard.
Wow.
I know. Cut off his head and eat his brain and shove it down his throat and crush his spine.
It wasn't very good delivery by Dennis Hopper. I was kind of disappointed in his delivery there.
Well, I feel like his delivery throughout was a bill-paying delivery. None of this felt like, finally, a role I can sink my teeth into. I feel like he just sort of phoned it in. And I think kind of needed that. Like, it didn't need to be...
Yeah, I mean, he looked like he was having fun the whole time, and I think that lends something to the villain character as someone who even kind of breaks that fourth wall and you know, is kind of in on the joke with the audience. Hey, I'm the bad guy. I can, you know, I can swear while the good guy can't, da-da-da-da, stuff
exactly.
like that.
Exactly.
Second appearance by Dennis Hopper in a film we've covered. Just wanted to make that mention of that. That happened in Speed, but that was our commentary, so it doesn't count necessarily. And we forgot to mention, because we talked about it pre-show, but the girl in this movie is the girl from Napoleon Dynamite with a side ponytail on her head, which is great.
Until
he chops it off.
So
I think it's Tina Majorino. I think Fletcher said Maharino.
Poor guy.
Several times.
He was so miserable with her name.
Through that.
we talked about that character's name at the beginning of the film, but not really. When you hear the name Enola, besides being alone backwards, which I don't think is the purpose of the name of the film, don't you think of the Enola Gay, the plane that bombed Hiroshima?
Yeah. I wondered about that.
So what? I mean, there's a horrible, horrible connection in this film to the allegedly drunk pilot of the Exxon Valdez. But what's the connection here? The name Enola? I don't get that.
Well, we don't know. I mean, she's 10, 12 years old. Somebody grabbed her at some point, forced a tattoo on her back, I guess. Who knew?
No, her mom and dad did.
But how do they know about Dreamland? They've been there?
Yeah, that's where they were.
Well, she came from there.
Oh.
Yeah, she came from
there.
She was
born there, tattooed there, and sent out into the ocean.
So here's a question for the scientists in our audience. When the world is covered with water like that, and if the only peak sticking out of it is the top of Everest.
Yeah.
Is the entire atmosphere shoved out with the water so that breathing is just as easy at the new sea level?
Higher heights.
You know what I'm saying?
Probably so. Oh. I mean, their bodies have adjusted by then anyway. So, I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. You're asking about atmospheric pressure at this elevation, but the elevation is over a liquid rather than over atmosphere.
Right.
I would imagine it's relatively similar. It's not that dissimilar.
I find that interesting.
Right? Because atmospheric pressure at whatever sea level is a result of the column of atmosphere above you. Yeah. Right? So if that column is relatively the same in elevation, then you have the same pressure.
I like that Scott thinks about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I do. I always think of that stuff. I can't.
But this movie he needs to watch every year.
Yep. Next year, I'll think of something new to think about. All right, let's move on to our Film Sack Awards as we wind down. The Shannon Tweed Skin Award went to the Stunt Butt.
Ah, Stunt Butt. Good job,
Stunt Butt.
The Wilford Brimley Mustache Award goes to Jeter. I don't think anyone else really had facial hair that mattered. The Jerry Lewis Bad Stereotype Award, I could not think of anyone because they're all kind of just weird archetypes. They're just archetypes.
Bad. Yeah, but I mean, the smokers are the Reavers from Firefly. They're the gang from Rogue Warrior. I mean, it's, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's a good point. Jack Black stereotype. Darth Maul's dumbest award, a death award, had to be the dude that flew through the air on his jet ski and slammed into the cage. That was great.
Pretty awful.
A new award this week, the Tom Cruise in Tropic Thunder cameo award goes to Jack Black.
That's awesome.
Andrew Barnyarsky's Glorious Death, anyone that sank into the yellow goo, the West Studi Best Small Award Role Award goes to the Paper Dude. Kim Coates is his name. You ever seen Paper?
Have you ever seen Paper?
Baby Ruth.
Has he been in anything else?
Off
the top of your head?
Yes, he's been
in a few things. He used to play the lunatic.
Yes, but he also always plays an evil guy. He was in some TV stuff I saw. He's Canadian, does a lot of Canadian production stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think of something very specific I saw him, and I can't think of it right now. But yeah, he's great. You should look him up. He's just got a look to him. That guy's awesome. Mm-hmm. Baby Ruth Bodily Function Award goes to Kevin Costner on The Lime Tree. although he didn't really pee on it, but I guess I take all that back. The David Ogden Stiers Star Trek Connection, I was unsure. I could not find somebody. And I know they're there. I'm sure of it. Like, I thought Jeter was in something. I couldn't find it. Will apparently has the answer.
Yeah, he does. And I just can't decipher it. It sounds like Kevin Costner was married to someone who was in Star Trek. But
something,
I can't
something
really.
Something like that, yeah. Ben Kenobi Award, Michael Jeter. The number five is Alive Comedy Relief Award's got to be the dude in the oil. It's best I can tell.
I don't know. I'm going to have to say, Dennis Hopper was... He cracked me up. There's two lines he cracked me up in.
Yeah, he was pretty funny.
I'll talk about it in my Twitter post.
He was pretty funny. Chewbacca Sidekick Award I would give to the hairy dude that was the bad guy henchman that was second in command. He was totally Chewbacca. The A-Team Montage Award. No montage, really, to speak of.
No, there wasn't.
Let's move. I have another new award. The Rube Goldberg Award. The Boat.
Right?
Dude, that was very awesome. Cool. Like all the little pulleys and... Dropping a bunch of little...
But in a world of scarcity, you don't have complexity. You have really, really simple stuff.
Yeah, I like it. It's like, oh, here's a harmonica to tell which way we're going. Here's the...
a bunch of BBs to, you know, when these all run through the hourglass, then it yanks me back up.
Yeah, I like that. Very MacGyver-y. And then, bonus points. Doing a really cool take on the dystopian future concept and the soundtrack grade I would give it is F in terms of application. I'd give it a B if it was a different movie. So there you go.
Right. I'm like an A and a C. I thought the score was fan freaking tastic, and C because it was in the wrong film.
Yeah. I don't know. I grade on the scale. I don't know what I'm saying. The curve is what I meant. Okay. Well, it's time to move to our Twitter post. This is 140 characters or less from Randy and Brian and Brian. And let's start this time with Randy. How would you sum it up?
Waterworld, too long, too slow, and too boring. Well, 2 + 2 + 2 = 6, that's simple math, but you still haven't proved Waterworld good. Math is hard.
I agree with that. Brian Ibbett, what do you have?
Waterworld, take one road warrior, just add water.
That's brilliant.
That's pretty good.
I'm not even doing one this week then.
And then Brian Dunaway, who is forced to do it anyway. What do you got?
Yeah, thanks, cousin. Waterworld, the best post-apocalyptic Waterworld in the industry. Maybe he doesn't answer to Chuck. Charles!
What? What you're talking about?
You remember the part? That's my favorite line in the whole movie.
Oh, yeah. The guy in the gun.
When Chuck is shooting, he's got the pig nose on, and he's coming around. And he says, What's his name? And he says, it's Chuck. Tell Chuck to stop shooting. Tell him to stop shooting. Chuck, stop shooting. And he says, maybe he doesn't answer to Chuck. Charles!
All right.
That was a really good line.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I've forgotten all about it. You'd think I would remember after seeing the movie once a year for 15 years.
That and my other Twitter post was going to be He's harder to flush than a turd. What was it? How'd it go?
Oh,
harder he's to like flush. A turd that won't flush.
He's like a turd that won't flush.
Yep. Good line. All right. Well, here's what I learned while you were all out drinking your own pee. You should use an old harmonica to tell when the wind changes direction. Mm. Nothing's free in Waterworld.
No, it's not.
Sucking on an empty lighter all day is weird. Hundreds of years with no land, and there are still tons of cigarettes to go around. How much chit do you have in your pocket? Chit. That's a dumb,
I remember that. I forgot all about that.
It's a terrible.
Take half your chit.
It's a terrible.
I'll take
currency.
Half your chit. How about no? How about 3/4 of my chit? No.
Give you all my chit. When I'm not singing for Whitesnake, I'm playing lead henchman. People sludge is gross. And finally, welcome to Bart. I'm sorry, I did that wrong. Welcome to Barteropolis. And that's what I learned while you were out drinking your own pee. We got an email from a listener this week that we'll rip through real quick. Team Film Sack this past Monday. By the way, this is from Cam. Says this past Monday was shaping up to be a pretty horrible day for me. Lots of stress at work, daughter getting sick, etc. I was in a major need of stress relief. So I turned on episode 50, The Running Man. What do I get? Instant gratification. Holy crap, I had more people at work giving me weird looks because I was laughing so hard, especially when Ibbot was doing the Running Man dance, followed by the android grunt from the Film Sack crew. Next thing I know, I'm having a great day. So thank you for putting out such a great show. It's great to know that when I need it, great laughs are just an iPod away. Thanks. Keep up the great work. Cam.
Oh, that was nice.
It was really nice.
Thank you. Makes us feel good.
Yeah, it makes us keep doing this horrible thing we're doing. I mean, geez, we got to keep it up now.
This is hard.
It is hard. But not as hard as Scott Fletcher having the best voice in the industry and then doing this quote from the film. Check it out.
I've seen your boat before. Haven't seen you.
Nice. And lastly, this one.
I've had a vision so great, as it came to me, I wept.
Aww.
Who said that? Single tear. Single tear goes down my cheek.
Who said that in the movie? I don't remember.
Dennis Hopper did when he was giving a speech to everybody. Oh, right. Exxon Valdez.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Got it. Boy, that Valdez joke just never ended, did it?
Oh, jeez. No, yeah, and there's going to be a whole generation of kids who probably won't get that reference or figure out who he's talking to. Portrait.
I had to explain it. Yeah, I had to explain it to my kids.
Yep. Maybe one day we'll have to explain what oil is to our grandkids.
We can only hope.
What's that man doing? That's black stuff. Just keep watching. So there you go, folks. That is Waterworld. Good times were had by all. Want to mention that next week we will be watching Over the Top with Sylvester Stallone. The arm.
Meet me halfway.
The arm wrestling epic.
Across the sky.
Lots of Kenny Loggins in the future. All kinds of good stuff happening. So check it out next week. That, again, is Over the Top. It's on Netflix streaming now. Watch it in advance. We will be talking about it next Friday. In the meantime, visit the website, filmsack.com. The email to send us your feedback and your emails to is filmsack@gmail.com. And on Twitter, we can be found at twitter.com/filmsack. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. Take care.
Thanks, cousins.
Dunaway, what's your pick before I tell you, man?
Hands down, The Bodyguard.
Oh, wow. I forgot all about that, dude.
Really?
I don't like The Bodyguard. Shut up.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.